The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 2 Podcast.
And we welcome all of you back on a dizzying day in college football. June 10th is supposed to be a calm time of the year when everybody's heading out, and we'll see you at media days. But this has been a breakneck week, and our next guest has been at the forefront of that breaking news all day long and all week on the college football playoff. The NIL is still to be determined. We'll get to that in a minute. But Pat Forte from Sports Illustrated joining us. Pat, thank you so much. And I don't think we've been giving these dinosaurs who we always say run college football enough credit. They've been hiding their deafness with surprise and shock. Good afternoon, and your reaction to what continues to go on in our sport.
Well, Paul, what you just said, you might as well have just read the lead of the column I'm finishing for Sports Illustrated right now. I mean, given the incredible dysfunctional history in college football, for them to have put this together quickly, efficiently, and I think a plan that can work and be well accepted, I'm impressed. I really am.
Yeah, I saw your piece the other day before they started confirming it, and you made a really interesting point that we just may have too many games in the season. Of course, try unwinding one of those games, but let's hear what you think. We just had Booger McFarland on, who pretty much hated the whole thing. Why do you think it's workable?
Well, a couple things. Yeah, I mean, I think a bigger playoff is better. I think this is a good kind of compromise playoff, that it brings more people into the tent. You keep the SEC happy because there's a lot of at-large bids. You make the G5 happy because they're going to get at least one automatic bid. I just think you bring more stakeholders in, and that's going to be good. My reservation, as I did enunciate in the column, was that you could be asking for people to play 16, 17 games at the high end, and that's too many for college athletes, I thought. Now, in discussions with some people today, I think there is going to be an openness to continuing to keep dates open in December to allow, so that you're not just backlogging these games and you're playing week after week after week through December. The plan that was put forward today would basically extend things another week into January. Quarterfinals on January 1st, 2nd in that area, and then semifinals after that, and then a championship game. So you've got that, and then I think there's also going to be a discussion about possibly starting on week zero and moving the start of the season to that point, so that you just give the players a little bit more time to heal their bodies, to rest, and hey, what a concept, maybe even to study for finals.
Yeah, I'm sure that's the most important thing. So not to upstage your column, but I have a, it's been a long time since I've written one, but I vaguely remember the concept. And let's go back to this group that has been a pinata, let's be honest, for all of us. Why do you think they saw the light finally?
I'm sure this mostly goes back to money. I would have to think, and I think, you know, frankly, we have watched college football be so intransigent for so long, so resistant to change. As I've said many times, it only took 145 years to get to a playoff. And then I think it was like everybody was so giddy that we had a playoff. This is great. But then after a few years, I was like, well, we have a playoff, but we could have a better playoff. We've got an immediate math problem with five Power Five conferences in four places for them. So let's see if we can alleviate that. We're constantly hearing from the Group of Five that they aren't, you know, respected or getting a shot at anything. Well, we can take care of that, and we can make a lot more money as well. So, you know, I think that once they started kind of looking at the playoff, and first of all embracing the playoff, but then thinking how to improve it, we also have had some conference commissioner turnover that I think has helped. If Jim Delaney is still at the Big Ten, I'm not sure this gets done as easily as it has. And possibly some of the other guys. I just think the change in leadership also has made things a little more open to changing the postseason.
And Pat Forty, well, there's so many things happening outside of this conversation, and I'm curious if you think all these other trains coming down the track, from NIL to the Supreme Court case, just to an openness to listen perhaps more today than there was before the pandemic and George Floyd. Do you think any or some of these things have affected and influenced this younger group of commissioners?
Yeah, I think I think that's a very good point. The status quo is no longer as defensible, so to speak, as it has been. It's no longer you can't sit in the ivory tower and stubbornly say no to everything and everyone that wants to change things. So I don't think there's any doubt about that. And you know, there's probably also something of a willingness to say, okay, name, image, and likeness. While it's not going to directly be colleges paying players, it could still take money away from us because the booster organizations that we count on for money may be diverting some of their money to the players as opposed to funds. How can we make that up? Alston case, if we end up losing that, we're going to be losing some of our money. Make that up. Well, the easiest, most obvious way is expand the playoff.
Talking to Pat Forty, Pat, you know, the complaints are always the same about the playoffs. Same teams, mismatches. I mean, you've written it 1,000 times. We've all uttered these comments. How does this change that?
Well, it may ultimately not change some of the mismatch situations. You know, I mean, Alabama may still absolutely dominate and beat teams by 3 or 4 touchdowns in quarterfinal, semifinal, and championship game. That may be not fixable at this point by a playoff, per se. But I think that first round of games on campus sites where, like last year, if last year's rankings had been in place, Georgia at Cincinnati, that would be fascinating. That would be fun. You know, just to have that matchup, to have the concept, the idea of a 11th seed Auburn going to play at a 6th seed Michigan would be awesome. You know, just to have those geographical differences, to have the most important games we've ever had on campuses, I just think it would add so much atmosphere and electricity to that first round. And then I just think that hopefully the level of play would get better and better after that as you go along.
Certainly, there'll be the predictable winners and losers columns written ad nauseum. But in terms of losing in this part of this piece of the equation, I mean, where would you point the finger at what group, what entity, or what mindset will have taken the biggest hit when this goes into effect?
Ultimately, I would probably say the bowl system. Which I'm not going to cry any tears for them. They've had an awfully good gig for an awfully long time. And you're going to continue to build out a playoff system that involves them a little bit less. Now, I mean, they're going to have quarterfinals that are going to be bowl games, ideally, according to this recommendation. So that would be exciting. But you were talking about that 5 through 12 first round of games that would have nothing to do with bowl games. And then those teams, presumably, certainly the ones that lose, would not then say, hey, let's go to a bowl game. So you would be taking them out of the mix for bowls. Again, the bowls have been good for college football, but mostly they've been good for the bowls. And the fact that college football has continued to outsource its postseason to a bunch of guys in blazers in different warm weather parts of the country has never made that much sense to me. And I think this is them taking back a little more control of it.
Pat, certainly your reputation is impressive on many fronts, but you've also covered a lot of college basketball and know a lot of college basketball coaches. And I'm just wondering, maybe you have spoken to some this week, but you know, December is a time for a lot of good matchups. Certainly January, you have conference games. I'm wondering what they are thinking today, because they've just lost a little more piece of the of real estate that they were desperately holding on to as well.
Yeah, no, you know, that's a good point. And I really haven't had those discussions. But, yes, this would take the football season one more week, theoretically, presumably, or at least a few more days into college basketball season. And that just kind of pushes their relevance into a smaller window. I'm not sure they're in position to do anything about it. You know, I think ever since realignment happened, Paul, a decade ago, and it became very clear that the driver for everything was football, basketball's just kind of had to say, well, we're along for the ride. And I don't think that changes at all here, probably further emphasizes that fact.
Well, they do get March, and they have quite a nice run in there, and I'm not shedding any tears. And of course, that's Mark Emmert's baby, who is still the commissioner. He's still the president of the NCAA. And I want to get you on that subject before you go, because as your colleague Ross Dellinger told us yesterday, it was a fascinating day in Congress. This is a conversation that we all know is still unresolved, but. Your thoughts on NIL and how all these things just seem to be merging together almost in some big bang effect.
Yeah, boy, I mean, the pace of change is accelerating. There's no doubt about that, and it's going to be profound. These are not small changes that we're talking about, whether it's compensating players or whether it's expanding the playoff. I mean, these are big things. And, you know, I think on the NIL front, Emmert was in his usual role of, you know, depending what term you want to use, pinata, meat shield, whatever, to just take the blows for the NCAA. And that's what he does, and he's paid handsomely to do it. It was one of the rare times when you could actually find people who make him almost a sympathetic character when you've got bloviating senators yelling at him. But, I think that what we need is, I think maybe we're getting a sense of senatorial urgency to get something done on name, image, and likeness. Now, we'll still have to actually see it happen, but, you know, I think that we're at least getting closer to somebody bailing out the NCAA and coming up with a workable plan and implementing it, and players can actually start to be compensated in a fair and just manner.
Pat, before you go, and I know you've been reporting on this all day long, so this is the working group that has sent this along. Take us through what happens next, and is there really much room remaining for change before this is certified, stamped, and sent to the presses?
I do think there's still some, yes, room for change. I mean, you know, the subhead on the release from the playoff said, first step in a long process, and I think that's just to slow the brakes a little bit. But the fact that they're putting out this release, the fact that it's as definitive as it is in terms of what the preferred plan is, the fact that some of the people involved in putting together the plan are Greg Sankey and Jack Swarbrick, you know, two of the most respected people in college sports, I think indicates this is probably going to happen. Now, yes, could there be some modification? The calendar, I think, is very much going to be up for grabs to a degree. Again, do they push further into January, or do they start earlier in August and go with make week zero the first week, and that's where you buy your extra week? I don't know how that'll ultimately play itself out. We don't know what the TV deal would look like. We don't know how the bowls are going to respond to this. So there's still a lot of detail work to be done. But, you know, my feeling is that we are 100% moving towards expansion, and that the 12-team expansion seems highly, highly likely to be enacted.
Pat, final question. You've worked at ESPN. I do now. They're a big part of this, and it's not like when you were there or even now they're sharing their conversations with us at our level in terms of how they're dealing. But is it? What's your best guess on the sign-off by the network to this, because they play a huge role in all of this, and it will ultimately cost them a lot of money?
Yeah, no, I mean, obviously a huge role. And, you know, it has been interesting. Throughout the playoff era, we know ESPN's involved, but nobody ever says exactly how they're involved in terms of sounding board, or actually driving ideas, or what? You know, I mean, how often is the communication there? Did this working group call Burke Magnus and say, hey, here's what we're thinking about. What do you guys think? Or is this something that you just come up independently and then lay on his desk and said, you guys, and then says, you guys respond to it. I don't know the answers to that, to exactly what ESPN's level of involvement is, but obviously they've been the biggest stakeholder in college football for a long time. The presumption is they'll continue to be in that role because it's so lucrative. But, you know, I mean, they've got to now decide, what's our buy-in on this? Does it remain the same as it has been? Do we want to invest more? Does this get at all outsourced? Or you know, are there other media companies that get involved or what? I don't know. We have to wait and see where those answers come.
Well done, as always. Pat Forty, thank you for making time. It's such a pleasure to have you on.
Thank you, Paul.
Wow, what a conversation. What a day already. We're only an hour and 15 minutes, and we've done like a month's worth of chatter about the CFP, and we are not done yet. More to come later on. Ralph Russo in our final hour. He's a senior college football editor for the Associated Press. More of your phone calls right after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
You're not worth a flip.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%. Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand-name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at Hims.com/Paul. That's Hims.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. Hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
And we are back. Heather Dinich will join us in a few minutes with her view of this breakneck news today from the CFP. Bill Hancock will join us tomorrow. And we'll get his view of the ever-changing world of college sports. I joked with Pat Forty, this is normally a calendar time of the year when things really calm down. You have the women's softball championship going on today, and obviously the baseball, which everyone is riveted to. But that's really about it. There's nothing else happening. But the college football story from the NIL to the CFP now. It has been as busy a time as I can remember, probably since maybe 11 years ago when all the expansion talk exploded in June. Let's get back to the calls and talk to John, who is up next. Hey, John, go right ahead.
Hey, Paul, good to talk to you.
Thank you very much.
Before I get to my comment, I'd like to ask you a question. I'm old schooler. Do you ever talk to Doug Vickers anymore?
We communicate. In fact, I was in Birmingham the other day just for a couple hours. I had to go to a funeral, and I was with somebody, my friend Bob Lockamy, who talks to Vickers all the time. And I keep saying we're going to get him to make an encore appearance on this program, and we will.
Yeah, I like Doug. He didn't play, man. He's old Air Force man, and he was a straight shooter.
Now before he calls me on the hotline, let me make sure you're talking about a sergeant in the United States Army. Hold on. Was he Air Force or Army? I can't remember. He may have been Air Force. You're right.
Yeah, I think he was.
I can't remember. Somebody needs to let me know whether Vickers was in the Army or the Air Force. But the more I think about it, I think he was in the Air Force.
Yeah. Well, he was military, man. I know that. But anyway, my comment, is I love Booger. I do. I think he's fantastic. He's passionate. But I think sometimes I think he may have caught him off guard today. And I think he needs to think a little bit. I looked it up. In 2019, North Dakota State, I think he won it all. And they played 16 games, season and playoffs. So I'm sure Division I players can play 16 games because odds are the top four teams that get a bye are going to be in the semifinals and championship. So odds are 90% of the time, one team, you know, the two teams are only going to play 16 games. Would you not agree with that?
Yeah, I would agree with that. And you're right. You know, and by the way, we did not catch Booger off guard. I was on ESPN with him yesterday, and he said the exact same thing.
Oh, okay. Okay. Well, I think, well, you know, he's, like I say, he's good, but I completely disagree with him. These guys can play it if Division I AA and Division II and the others. But anyway, that was basically all I had to say, and I really enjoy your show.
Well, thank you. And I will pass along to Vickers next time I talk to him your thoughts. And thank you. We appreciate it. Let's talk to Jeff, who is in Maryland. Hey, Jeff, go right ahead.
Hey, so I had 2 points, but a previous caller nailed my first one, which is that the FCS has been doing this for years. They've had a playoff. It's been in football. It's actually D1 is the one sport that hasn't actually had a true championship. So that said, I also disagree very strongly with Pat. I think this is actually a win-win for the bowl games. He thought they were going to lose. They've been losing for a while now, and they've actually even more recently, because if you're not in the semifinals or the championship, yeah, we're seeing players now rightfully, opt out of bowl games because they don't want to get injured in a meaningless game. And now what you're doing is you're taking four of those second-tier bowls and you're making them part of the championship. So, and there's going to be very good teams that are going to be playing in those games, and chances are those star players aren't going to opt out for playing for a championship. So we're going to have the Peach Bowl, maybe the Gator Bowl. Some of these other bowl games are going to mean something now. So I think it's actually a big win for the bowls. That's all I got.
Okay, yeah. I think there's just a lot that we don't know. And clearly we haven't even seen an official announcement yet. But and I think the bowl game – I think the better bowl games will be okay. But I worry about those bowl games who – those pre-Christmas bowl games who – had the opportunity during the first couple of during that week of that Saturday before Christmas to be on national display, and now they'll be overwhelmed by these. But there's nothing you can do about that. I mean, this is progress, and with progress, unfortunately, you have to cut some things out. Thanks very much. Let's take a break. More to come. More of your phone calls, 855-242-7285. Heather Dennett joining us in a few minutes. We'll get her take on what is going on as we speak.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
You're not worth a flip.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
AJ is up next in Florida. AJ, thanks. Good afternoon to you.
Hey, Paul.
Hi there.
Hey, how you doing?
AJ, we're all doing great. Thank you for calling.
I enjoy your show.
Well, we appreciate that.
I talked to you about a year and a half ago, 2 years ago. At the time, I was in Ohio. But I am not a Buckeye fan. I'm a Bama fan. But what I'm calling for, I've been hearing all the talk. And I see this morning they have the schedule set up for 12 teams to play in this playoff. And I had written on a card I had, I don't know what date this was, some time back. And I was adding these figures up. And when you normally the teams are scheduled to play 12 games during the season. And I had added it up after all of the games they would play, it'd be 16 games. Like Booger, I heard Booger earlier, and I agree with him. That's a lot of games for some kids to play. You know, that's just about as bad as the NFL. They're up to about 18 games in there, or close to 20. And I think somebody had mentioned about the money aspect part of it. Some of the people are upset and stuff, but that's all part of change. Now, some of that money, a lot of it was lost during the pandemic, and they may be trying to catch up with it, you know, from that loss. And with us still in that pandemic and coming out, some people are protecting themselves and some not. But they're getting ready to open everything up. But let me ask you this. Have you tried to diagnose or figure out how they came up with the 12 teams?
I've tried, AJ. I'm not sure. I mean, I think you can do the math. I think they believe that if you only add four, you're just really adding another layer. This is adding potentially, you're adding three more weekends, yeah. And the amount of games I think will equal a tremendous stream of revenue.
Yeah, it will. Now, let me ask you this before I get into it. I'll ask you another question. Tell you something else I had on my mind.
Okay.
You mentioned something about, is Notre Dame in a conference?
No.
Aren't they in the ACC?
No. Here's the deal. Notre Dame is an independent. However, it has a relationship with the ACC in every sport other than, I believe, football and hockey. And what do they play? They play five ACC games a year, or maybe there's more. But so last year, they temporarily played in the ACC just to because they had it was going to be too difficult to line up an independent schedule. But this year and every other year, they are independent.
Okay, so this year they're independent.
Correct.
Okay, I understand. So last year, if they would have beat Clemson in the playoffs, they would have gone to the playoffs and not Clemson.
Well, yeah. I mean, ultimately, okay. They did go, but.
Okay, yeah. Okay, so what I was looking at, I understand what they did. When they first come out with the 12, I was writing this down. I said, well, they got one team from the SEC, one from the ACC, one from the Big Ten, one from the Big 12. Well, the Pac-12 didn't do that well last year. So what I was thinking, I said, well, they're going to break it down and have five teams from the Power Five schools. But evidently they didn't. Now, what I'm looking at is a possibility that they came up with that 12. They're looking at the Power Five schools that I just mentioned. Then they're looking at those other little small conferences that complained that they couldn't get in to play with the big boys.
Right.
And they're giving them a chance to play with the big boys. So I'm looking at the Mountain West Conference that has San Jose State, Boise State, Nevada, Hawaii, and San Diego State. Then you got the AAC, which is the American Athletic.
Yeah, AJ, I hate to run, but I hate to do this because we have a guest waiting, and I don't want to shortchange that because she has some of the answers to your questions, which I don't. We'll take a break. Heather Dinich will join us next with the absolute latest on the CFP expansion.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
You're not worth a flip.
And we welcome you back on a very busy day in college football, and no person better to talk to than Heather Dinich, who covers the CFP so well for ESPN. Heather, we've tried to go over as well as we could the news of the day, even though there is still more news yet to be made. But just from what you have seen and the people with whom you have spoken to, what are the treetops takeaways from another dizzying day in college football?
Paul, this has been a very positive response in the past hour. The people that I've spoken to in positions of power, I just hung up with American Athletic Conference Commissioner Mike Oresko, and I asked him, what are the roadblocks to this? What might happen that this would not be approved next week when the commissioners meet in Chicago? And he said that he thinks that it's hard to attack. He said he hopes it will be. And he likes the fairness of this and the fact that it is the six conference champions that are highest ranked. There's no designation between Power Five and Group of Five in that language. So some team who's the highest-ranked conference champion from the Group of Five is going to get a spot. It appears to be more fair, more equitable across the board, more access, and inevitably preserves the regular college football season while at the same time placing an emphasis on conference championship games, which some people seem to think this current system is starting to get away from a bit.
Yeah, let's talk about that, because really coming into this, a lot of us were thinking these conference championship games would be a waste of time. So, Heather, on that point, let's go over what you have learned so far in terms of the valuation of those games and how it affects what we are about to see in a couple of years.
Well, it's going to be a big deal. It's also going to be a big deal for Notre Dame that doesn't have one, because I confirmed with the Irish that they can't get a bye because those byes are reserved for the conference champions, the highest ranked conference champions. So the independents are in a different boat. That places a little bit more pressure on them, I think, to not only play extraordinarily well, but play a great schedule. And look, Notre Dame does that. I'm not sure they get enough credit for it, but if you look at their schedule, typically it's not easy to beat USC, Stanford, and a lot of those other teams that they line up. They've got, I think, five ACC opponents again this year. So they've got to be good, but the conference championships games overall, because of those buys and the rewards you get for winning them and the seeding, that's a big deal. And going into this thing, even going from 2 to 4, they have remained an integral part to the commissioner's priorities. And even when considering this, none of them are going to say, we're going to get rid of our conference championship games to expand the playoffs. So this is the opposite, putting more of an emphasis on it.
On the Notre Dame front, I think it was next year or the year after, I can't remember which one it is, Notre Dame plays Clemson and Ohio State. Just for sake of argument, let's say they're undefeated, they're 12-0, they're number one in the college football playoff going into the final weekend. How crazy is that going to be that they're not going to get a bye?
Well, that's going to be crazy. I mean, is that going to happen? And will they be rewarded with such a high spot without being a conference champion? I think you also have to ask that question. But I will say this, because it reminds me of another point, Paul, is that everyone has to agree on this next week, first of all, right? And second, just because of what we see in the proposal today, that doesn't mean it's etched in stone. They could go and agree on 12 teams next week and say, yeah, but you know what? I like it this way, and I think maybe we should do this, etc. That being said, I'll be shocked if they leave Chicago next week and 12 teams isn't the answer. We're at this point. To me, it's 12 or bust at this point. But that's not to say that other aspects of this proposal can't be changed.
Heather, what are you hearing on the I think it's the quarterfinals now that are supposed to be at neutral sites? I mean, the early speculation was we would still be on campuses at that point. I realize nothing is etched in stone, as you said, but how do you think they came to that conclusion and why?
Well, it's important to note that they haven't also included in that proposal how the bowls play into the rotation. And that's part of the process in terms of if they agree on Friday, they go to the presidents and chancellors next week and they say, okay, you have the green light, go figure out how to make this work. Not only do they have to figure that out and the bowls, the TV contract, the financial aspect of it, there are a lot of stones uncovered here and a lot more research and homework that has to be done before reconvening again in September to say, we've got it, here's how you do it, or we don't.
I mean, we're talking to Heather Dinage, is closer to this conversation than you are. So I ask you this, if you could excise the last couple of weeks when this thing started to turn, starting with Bill Hancock's release a few weeks ago, what happened to all those comments that we heard from him and others about how much they liked where we are and we didn't need to change and it's working just fine, thank you?
It's a great question. And if I had Greg Sankey here, he would be the first person I would ask, because continuously, he might have been the most staunch in his comment for has worked, for is working, and for can continue to work. And I said, Greg, is there ever going to be a day where I'm going to ask you about the playoff and that's not going to be your answer? And he said, no. So I don't know what changed his mind other than 2 years of work, trying to keep this quiet, play it close to the vest. That's my best guess, Paul. But also just simply wanting to do a thorough amount of research on their end. But you're right, it's quite different from what we've been hearing.
Heather, I know you're a reporter on this, but you're also someone who loves the game. I spent enough time with you, and your emotion for it is extraordinary. So just having written and commented comments like Sankey's a minute ago so many times, I mean, what are you thinking as this is all starting to settle down and make the turn toward Chicago next week and fairly close to being reality?
I'm excited, Paul. That's the honest truth. That's the honest reaction. I'm excited to go to Chicago next week and see the commissioners in person for the first time in over a year. I'm excited to be able to be covering this historic part, because when it went from the BCS to the playoff, I wasn't as entrenched in the change as I am now. And to see it unfolding and see the fans' excitement on Twitter for the possibilities and what it could be, I think it's amazing. But I will tell you, I'm very concerned about how much I need to continue to lurk outside the selection committee meeting room in Grapevine, Texas, because I don't know if it's going to become much more clear what they're going to do with their rankings. But I know that the selection committee is still going to play a very important role. I hope that I can still get a slice of bacon when they're not looking.
Yeah, no, and on that front, because, I mean, they're such an easy target for some of the pundits in this conversation, not you, but me. But how, and I realize this is another conversation, but you know, does it get easier for them or more complicated because of the addition of eight more spots in the field?
I think it depends on the year, just like this year. I mean, it's hard to say without going through it, right? But when you look at it on the surface, I mean, if you've got five great conference champions, then it's a little more certain, or six, I should say, right? But if you have a year like we did in 2020, where the Pac-12 champion is sitting there at number 25, opens the door for some more conversations. And I think that's where it could get really fun and interesting, is the potential for upsets in those conference championship games. And that's why when it went from 2 to 4, they did not want automatic qualifiers, because they didn't want to have an average team that just happened to win on the right day be considered as one of the four best teams in the country. And so this method of doing it helps prevent that, while also reward conference champions at the same time.
A couple of seconds remaining on that front, because that was something we were concerned about, and I heard you say that yesterday, but is that one of the bigger surprises of this, or what is the biggest surprise of this in the final 30 or 40 seconds that we have left?
Yes, that would be my biggest surprise, was that, wow, they found a way to do this. Somehow there's a happy medium here where you can still say these are the best teams. We believe that they earned that. But at the same time, well, if you're Oregon, you're out of luck. I'm sorry.
Heather, I know it's a busy day. We appreciate you dropping in, and we can't wait to talk to you next week in Chicago. That is going to be fascinating. Appreciate it, Heather.
Thanks, Paul.
I mean, Heather said it. I mean, and I, you know, being a cynic, that comes with the territory. But I can't help but share her enthusiasm as someone. And I feel like I speak for everyone. I mean, we're all college football fans here. But I mean, we are inching toward a day that I don't think any of us really thought we would see. And it is extraordinarily exciting to think that the four highest-ranked conference champions will be seeded 1 through 4. This is a real playoff here. 5 through 12 again play each other in the first round on home field of the higher-ranked teams. Quarter and semis in the bowls, and the championship game sometime in January. We'll be right back with much, much more.
Thank you for listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast. The Paul Feinbaum Show airs weekdays on the SEC Network, beginning at 3 Eastern.